200 years since they invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Don't call me a problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello, welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tease Johnson, Gomeroi journalist from Moree, New South Wales. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today. It's wherever you're listening, your elders past and present. Happy NAIDOC week, everyone. We're coming to you live from AAA. She's at studios upstairs here, and we're kicking off the week. We're going to speak to a couple of young ones, a couple of shining lights in our community who really are inspiring and are the next generation of young leaders coming through. And it's great today. We've got young Kyle Pugh Ryan, who is a
Yagara
man. That's right. Bit of misspelling here, but it's all good. Kyle is an invaluable member of Inala Wangara's board, where he volunteers his time. Kyle is supportive and the first person to put his hand up and help out. Kyle is currently completing his degree in medicine at the University of Queensland after graduating from Glenala State High, with an OP of 1. I'm going to find out what that means very soon. Kyle is wise behind his years and has been awarded the QuadCIF Young Achiever Award and the 7 News Young Achiever. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, man, so tell us your mob, your country. We've got the info wrong here. We'll just fix that up for you.
So I'm a proud Yagara Yugurupul man. So I've got connections down to Deben Creek Mission and Perga Missions with all of my ancestors there. And I've lived and grown up on my country in Inala there.
Yeah, right, brother. Hey, thanks for coming in today. It's great to kick off the show with young people and talk about what you guys are up to, because, like I said, yous are the next generation of change. So it's good to have yous in here talking today. Brother, what is an OP of 1?
That was the old school Queensland Certificate of Education scoring. So there's OP 1 to 25, and OP 1 is the top 3% in the state. So I was really pleased to be able to achieve that so I can get into medicine.
It's pretty unheard of, OP of 1. So you're like the ducks of the college, of the school.
I guess so.
Yeah. No, well done, brother. Do you remember Doogie Howser MD, the TV show at all?
No, I do not.
No, it's wise beyond your years. But Doogie Howser MD was actually a childhood doctor. So he's a child, but he's a doctor. He's a genius. Paul, you get the reference, don't you, brother? Yep, thanks. Mate, tell us about the work you do with Inala Wangara, an amazing community organisation here in southeast Queensland, very famous, very well known. Tell us about the work you do on the board there, brother.
I was very pleased to be able to be invited to be nominated on the board by the President, Stephen Coghill. He's one of my distant cousins, so he recognised that I'd be keen to get involved in that sort of organisation. But what Inala Wangara is all about, it's all about social justice and making sure that we're addressing, mitigating those inequities that we see in our community. We do a lot of, like Murray Court, we make sure that fellas that go into court that are in trouble, that they have cultural safe jury hearings. Mm-hmm. We make sure that there's a lot of sports wellbeing events around the community, a lot of fundraising. Inala Wangara board represents 28 of the largest families in Inala. So we're very, very one of the biggest ACOs that there is, Aboriginal controlled community organisations. So yeah, very pleased to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's just no knowledge, brother. Where does this learning come from? You getting passed on, you know, to look after community, to invest in community, and I guess have these leadership skills. Where does this come from for you? Who taught you this?
That would be my mum, Gloria Becky. She spent years at the University of Queensland working as a secretary for one of the white professors, I forget his name, but in genealogy, and she wanted to really find out where our family was from.
Yeah, right.
And we didn't know nothing at that time when she was growing up. So she was really determined to go and find out how our connections and who we are so we can stand strong and no one can tell us where our country is.
Yep.
So she did a lot of research through and learnt alongside the professor and did her own independent research, and that's how we found out our connections here today and where we come from and who we are.
Yeah, so your mum's a genius as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful, brother. I love it. Because of Her We Can was another NAIDOC theme, right? I always remember that one. Hey, what is it about medicine that draws you into that? We see a lot of our people are nurses, and we see more and more doctors come through. What is it about medicine that drew you in, and why do you want to, I guess, perform in this field?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a nerd myself, so I love...
Hey, brah, same.
Yeah, I love science, anything like physics, astronomy, anything around science, basically, in math. And so I didn't want to just do a basic science job in a research lab. I'm really out there. I'm a really talkative person, so I didn't want to just sit down in my own little room and do my own thing. So I want to do something for the community. And I thought, well, I love my culture and everything as well, and I'm trying to learn more as I go because it's a journey for everyone. And I just wanted to combine all of those. And I guess my passion is growing the more and more I see and go through medicine and how much my community needs people, black fellows, to treat and black fellows to be the leader in a clinic and make decisions for them. Because, like you said, there's a lot of nurses, there's a lot of allied health, but they always have to answer to some sort of doctor and some sort of person, and you'd rather have that person on your side.
Yeah, no, because unfortunately, like, you know, not going to shy away from the truth that people are still dying in hospitals when they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And it's probably because, you know, we don't have enough black fellows in there. Yeah. Help them mob out, you know.
Yeah.
You know what sort of field you want to expertise in when it comes to medicine?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about it, and I want to do rural medicine. So rural medicine out in country, even if it's away from my urban city over here, helping out other mobs in rural areas, because the biggest health disparity in rural Queensland, at least in the north of the Tropic of Capricorn, is that there's not enough GPs or general practitioners. Yeah. It's going down, and there's more people uptaking specialty positions like cardiology, a neurologist or a surgeon or whatnot, and that's all fine and dandy and all, but you're not going to be able to make the biggest difference. To me, that biggest difference is being in the community and being that first point of call, like a general practitioner, and being in community and just making sure that they don't need to get to that stage where they see a specialist. So that was my biggest decision about rural medicine, because I can be in community and not have to wait for someone to refer them to me. And
yep,
my community is easily accessible. They can come into my door without a referral and come and see me. And I want to be that point of call for them.
Yeah. But why not the city? A lot of mob live in the city. And there's obviously quite different expectations, different needs as further as we go west. I come from out west. Never saw a black doctor in my life till now. But why the west?
Well, I want to do rural medicine because there's an Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine, and what that allows me to do is I can be a rural generalist GP out in community. But what that also allows me to do is...
It puts you on the front line more, doesn't it, with the community rather than in the hospitals doing surgery.
And what that allows me to do is that allows me to come back to the urban areas and be a GP in that sense as well. So it's not going to... it gives me the best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah. Studying. A lot of our mob, younger mobs, struggle with studying full time in uni. You know, myself included, I barely got through. What advice do you give people who's studying? Because it is a commitment. It's like a job, you know, when you're there at uni. It's not a little holiday thing. But what advice do you give to young people going to university to study and to stay there?
I think the biggest barrier to everyone getting through and university retention is everyone comparing themselves to everyone else. Even myself, a lot of black fellas, they want to compare themselves and see where they are in relation to other people. And then they get, even I get a bit shame comparing myself to others. But what I've learnt going through medicine is to not listen to all of that, not compare yourself to how fast someone else is in their life. If you fail, you fail, you just get up and do it again. And it's only you on that journey. And at the end of the day, you're your own biggest critic. That's what my mum's always told me. Don't be too hard on yourself as well when you're going through that.
The NADOC theme this year is Get Up, Show Up, Stand Up. When you think about just that theme, what does that theme sort of say to you?
That means no more tokenism, I think. No more symbolism in these institutions.
Come on there, Cass, tell them.
I think I've been through 6 years of university, and there's multiple avenues where I've seen universities have the opportunity to be able to show genuine care about our communities, but they just want to tick the box. They just want to follow their reconciliation action plan that they just signed or whatever.
Yep.
That's the new hot topic nowadays in institutions.
Yep, tick, yep. Box.
But I've just had enough of it, and so this year I've made it my goal to actually make these institutions put their money where their mouth is.
Go on there, Kaz. Tell them. I love it. Can you have activism in medicine?
100%. The biggest.
Tell us how you do it.
The biggest activism I'm doing right now is through medical education. So I'm doing a lot of policy writing for the Australian Medical Student Association about, it's called the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health and Medical Curriculum Policy. And what that does is we're trying to call for a standardised approach to teaching cultural safety and teaching Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health in our communities, because if you go to UQ, for example, they might have one sort of system or standard for teaching it, but that might be interpreted differently by another university. So I've noticed that there is a discrepancy between the educations for medical students even.
Yeah.
And there's been reports by the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association that show that 88% of people, medical graduates, do not feel prepared to treat their Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients or colleagues.
Mm.
And that's a self-reflective study that they did. So I think there's an importance to incorporate more education, because that's one of the higher upstream approaches that I believe will help doctors be better doctors for their people.
Yeah, because it is such a, like, the world of medicine is so white, right?
Yes.
You know, and it always has been, but now we're trying to, I guess, put our own sort of cultural stamp in there through, you know, yourself and many other Aboriginal,
yeah,
Torres Strait Islander doctors, right? And where to from here, brother?
Where to from here?
You've got another couple of years of study to go, and then what next for you?
Well, next year I want to try and get into my rural placements. I'm up in country, up in West Queensland or somewhere in rural area, just because I feel like they'll prepare me the best for what I want to do with my career. So hopefully.
And you're so young, you can go and try a few different things, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. So I definitely want to. I don't want to be in a hospital. That's not me. I don't want to be a big surgeon and a big shot in the hospital with a big name and whatever. Yeah. I just want to be in a community GP, an Aboriginal medical service, and just be happy with my people coming and seeing me.
That's a great way to end the interview on, brother. I know you've got to get onto your you got to go to class soon, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, but I just want to tell you some good news, if that's okay, Rhea, to announce it. Looking at the, what's that, Rhea? Hey, brother, I just want to tell you that you've been nominated as a finalist for the Brisbane NAIDOC Youth Award, which recognises and celebrates an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young person aged 16 to 25.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You've been nominated, Kaz. You're a finalist. Woo!
Thank you.
Woo! In the background there. And, yeah, we just want to say congratulations on being nominated, and obviously your great work in the community and the great work in your studies is a testament to what you're doing, and obviously a lot of that comes from your mum too, so I hope you're both sharing this this award and being nominated, brother.
Thank you so much.
Oh, that means a lot. So 16 to 25, who's developing into an emerging leader in their community within southeast Queensland, the Brisbane NAIDOC young person is connected to community and culture and striving for excellence in their respective area. Kyle Becu-Ryan, congratulations, brother.
Thank you so much, mate.
Okay, thank you. We're going to call in the next guest now. Kiana, thanks, brother. Have a good day. Get over and study, eh? Yeah. I want to talk to you about it. Got to write a PhD next year. Might get your help there, cuz. Just come over to Triple A anytime.
Yes, this is live right now.
Live radio. This is how we roll at Triple A.
I'm getting ready.
She's whispering. Hey, nice earrings. You from Stratty?
I'm from Stratty.
Yay. Hey, sis, I better read out your bio here. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, I'm good. Kiana is a proud Gumpal. Gurumpul. Guri woman. Her bloodlines connects to her, help me say this,
Chirayandjuri or Tedangadi.
So I'm getting a language lesson here. I'm live, okay. Live from Stratty, Yagara and Cubby Cubby Country. Kiana currently teaches Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander studies across two schools, Brisbane School of Distance Education and Dunwich Primary School at Stratty, plus her part-time consultancy, which is the Gundine Institute. Welcome to the show, sister.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me.
So your mob, your country, a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a proud Gurumpul Guri. So our family are from Yagara country here. Also, I'm a Gurumpul woman from Stradbroke. We're recognised as one of the family groups in the native title claim over there. And we've also got connections up to Gubbi Gubbi country too.
Yeah. Tell us about education and your passion for education. I'm big on education myself because I never had any when I was a kid, but you know, what is it about education that really gets you going?
For me, I think my learning experience growing up, I'm very fortunate to have lived and grown up on country and be very connected and have a family of very staunch people to learn from, and I guess throughout my educational experience that was never recognised or seen within the school environment, and it was often like I needed to leave that at the door when I went into the classroom. And I remember thinking, how come, you know, us Guri kids, where, you know, it's not really about us, it's the education system. I didn't think like this in year two, but reflecting on it,
yeah.
You know, the education system is really built upon values of Eurocentric worldviews that don't even consider our perspectives. And I think about the history of education, how it was built as a system to disadvantage and oppress our people rather to enhance and benefit our people.
Amen.
So for me, education is something, education's the system, but learning is the tool that we can install within our young, I believe, because I think the future is our young. And by teaching them the tool of learning and to always be lifelong learners within the system of education, our people will only keep advancing.
Yeah. I really identify that. Resonates deeply with me. At home, we used to call primary school the first prison.
It is.
Because that's where we went and got the cane. That's where we were getting, got detention. It just wasn't good. Primary school was not good for us mob at home. We used to call it the first prison. What's been done now to change all of that, to make, you know, through your work particularly and a lot of other educators out there, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander educators, trying to make schools a safe place and a culturally safe place?
Yeah, I think there's lots of work that needs to be done. You know, like I always, within my family, I've got one of my, you know, elders, Annie Carey, who was a teacher, who I've learned a lot from. We've got lots of teachers within our family, and I thought I was, you know, cut out for the job. But when I actually started teaching in a school, after 4 years teaching year four, which is a very colonial-based narrative, I was like, I can't keep doing this.
Hello, Captain Cook, just discovered Australia.
And I was like, where? And then you've got this little tiny box. Our Indigenous people have lived here for 60,000 years, you know, and you're like, hang on, where's our perspective? So after 4 years, I went and studied a Master's of Indigenous Education, because to try to understand how we can create schools to be more inclusive and embed and, you know, embrace teachers, because so many teachers, statistically, white middle-aged women are the, you know, majority of teachers. So they didn't have that education. This fella needs water.
I'm half choking her.
I'm like, do I keep going or?
I'm trying to like do hand signals, but yeah, thanks, Paul, for letting me down.
I thought you were like preaching what I'm saying. I'm like, oh, he's getting into it.
I'm like, water.
I'm like, he's hearing me. I'll keep going.
Keep going. Preach, sister, preach.
I really thought you were doing one of these ones, like fist pumping.
I was. It's NAIDOC week. I'm getting up, standing up, and I'm showing up here. All right.
And drinking water.
Sorry. What were you talking about?
Anyways, I don't even remember. No, just about how I tried to better myself in terms of understanding by learning more, you know, because that's what we've always grown up with. You want to do more, you got to be more and learn more and, you know.
So you don't school teach anymore?
Yeah, I still teach full-time.
Yep.
So I teach Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies at Coorparoo at the Brisbane School of Distance Education. Mm-hmm. So we've been on the show before to try to promote that subject, because we offered it to every Queensland school.
What is that?
The subject.
Yeah.
So it's a year 11 and 12 general subject students can do. And the first year we only had 8 students out of all of Queensland students do it. So it's reflective of one educational learning experience. I don't learn enough about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because if they did and they were interested in it, they'd want to do that subject. Unlike legal studies or psychology, they get, you know, 6 classes straight up. So I'm trying to promote that. And then for me, country is really important and being connected, navigating in this Western world we live in. So I needed to get home and teach on Strati and give to my community. So I teach there 3 days.
What's it like teaching on country? One of the most profound experiences I had in education was when the system up at NT changed, Northern Territory, and they took kids out on country.
Mm.
And so for the first time, I remember we did a maths lesson on country and we went fishing. We caught 12 barramundi, and out of them 12 barramundi, we did subtraction, addition, multiplication, because we're just like, what's 3 times 3 barramundi? What's 6 minus 4 barramundi? And we just, you know, we'd moved all the barramundi around, and people were learning maths and education. What's it like teaching on country, and do you see a different energy in the black kids when they're getting taught on country?
Oh, like it's still hard because you're bounded by the system,
yep.
You know, and the system is the schooling institution, which is driven by curriculum and policies, which, you know, haven't always aligned with us. But I think, you know, we've been learning on country. That's how we have been learning, you know, for 80,000 plus years. Mm-hmm. I think what the where I'm teaching now, I'm in the a position, I guess, to teach First Nations education to from prep up to year six as a so just like you'd learn, you know, like Chinese or, you know, HPE, it's a selective subject, is that's compulsory, so I get to teach that. And on Friday afternoons, I get to take the kids out wherever I want. So, you know, a group of us would go out kayaking or, you know, just walk in the mangroves or do something. And it's just being, you know, it's not having to think about, oh, I'm learning, but just being and actually being connected and feeling that, which, you know, is the highlight for me.
Yeah, because... Yeah, I don't know, it just does something to the Aboriginal soul when you learn on country. And like you said, just being.
Yeah.
You've got the pressure and stress of getting tested on everything.
Mm. Yeah. You know? And, you know, it's got, I think, 50%, you know, First Nations kids. So they should be doing that, you know. That they've got the, you know, Stradbroke's got so much over there. And I think, you know, my vision is to be able to bring that more within the students' learning experience, and not just for our kids, but also the kids that come from the Point or from Amity, to realise that that connection that we have with country and land is something that has sustained us and will continue to sustain us, especially with, you know, conversations around climate change. We've all got to start understanding and adopting our First Nations perspectives.
Yeah, 100%. When we talk about the system, when we talk about policy, and you talk about change within, you know, we're under the Queensland state government up here.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like dealing, I guess, trying to change policy and make change within the education system for our kids in a very colonial white system of the education system?
Yeah, it's so, like, for me, I just try to
really
do...
Really important to understand the challenges are out there that people are doing to try and change things, but just how long that change takes as well.
Yeah, look, change takes time, and, you know, sometimes you take two steps and you think, I've made change, and then it's something happens and it's 10 steps backwards, you know. Like, I speak to in town some of the people who work through, you know, in the big office there, and some of the challenges they face, and I think because our voices are still seen as another, or they're still marginalised, until our voices are considered to be at the foundation within, included within these policies. But we have to, I guess, decolonise, and systems need to decolonise the root of what built these systems. And until that occurs, we're still going to face those problems, because the system of education was used as a governance for our people, to control our people. So until we truth tell within the system, and that goes through that healing process, the outcome will still just be how we've always been, just, you know, on the side. But in saying that, I believe that I've worked with some wonderful teachers and people within the schools, that the teachers on the ground, and if we make noise from the ground up, they're going to have to shift up here, because we can't wait for the top to imply it down.
No. Do you find there's a lot of support from non-Indigenous teachers these days?
Yeah.
I'm going back to the 80s now, but 80s and 90s there wasn't, my experience.
I think a lot, I don't know.
I think there's a new appreciation for Aboriginal culture and learning.
Yeah.
And our traditional knowledges that are for all children in the classroom, not just ours, you know.
And lots of teachers want to do the right thing. I think there's lots of, you know, people are scared, what do I do, what do I say? And that's why on the side of full-time teaching, I write teacher resources to localise perspectives as well. There's lots of good teachers, but I think it's also realising that we mark to a criteria, which Chris Evers talks about in town. You know, Chris, a criteria is often a tick box. So, you know, the student knows this by showing this, where with our worldview, we're a continuum of knowledge. There's not one way. There's not one way that you're, you know, you know everything about Aboriginal people, because that's a colonial term. We're not all the same.
No.
You know, so as teachers surrendering to the fact that they won't know everything and that they're learning too is, I think, the biggest learning journey and the awakening that teachers need to be on.
Yeah, because, I mean, teachers spend more time with our kids than we do as parents, you know, because they're at class all day if they're not wagging. But there's so much pressure and stress on teachers now, you know?
Yeah.
The kids can wag.
Pardon?
Is that still a term? Wagging? Wagging, Paul? Is that still a term? Wags work now and then, Paulie, don't you? But, you know, there's so much pressure and stress on teachers, and there's so much diverse kids out there, you know, even amongst our own. Is there support out there? Because the teaching industry, like, not many people are taking it up and going into teaching.
And there's a shortage of teachers, you know, like, and I see it, you know, because you get, like, you can't do it for the money. You get paid to go in and to teach, and then all the other planning that you do on the side, and then, you know, you've just got more and more stuff coming down from the top that you have to embed and marking, and it's huge. And it's kids these days, because they've grown up on these things, you know, their attention spans are a lot shorter, you know, so they're coming with a lot more complex needs and, you know, yeah. But you
isn't do that right, Rubes? Eh? Isn't that right, Ruby?
But no, I love it, and I'll keep doing it, and yeah, because I notice change.
Get up, show up, stand up in teaching. Mm-hmm. Can you be an activist and a teacher?
Of course, yep.
Tell us how. Because a lot of people just put us in the boxes, oh, you're just a teacher, or you're just a nurse, or you're just a doctor, you can't be all this and that. But you can be an activist at work, right?
Yeah, you can, and you can definitely be able to get up, stand up and show up when you just, you know, by going to work. Indigenous teachers don't even make up 1% of the Indigenous population, because in Queensland that is, and that's reflective of, because it's a industry that isn't made for us to succeed in, you know. So just by going to work and being the voice and standing up is something that I think you are being an activist in its own sort of way within the system. But also, you know, just like, you know, you have your job and then you go home, you don't stop being a blackballer. You know, you are always doing stuff. Like where I'm at, from Strati at the moment, I work a little bit with my family in, you know, the Quandamooka Truth Embassy over there. You know, so that you're always doing things on the side that's being able to, I guess, be an activist in, I guess, things that are happening on country and around as well. You know, Black Lives Matter, all that stuff. And then you bring that into the school and you help bring awareness into social and, you know, political issues that are happening on the community.
How is that, bringing an issue like Black Lives Matter into a school and trying to explain it, and then trying to, I guess you have to try to find balance where you're not pushing it down people's throats, because then all the white teachers will get upset.
Oh, yeah. Like, I wouldn't go and, you know, teach it to my preppies, but my grade 11 and 12
hey,
students.
Hey, Mum, I love Black Lives Matter.
When I say Black Lives, you say matter, Kevin. Go home and chant that to your parents. Hey, Kevin.
Why can't we do that?
They go home, you know, to the houses of, you know, your Black Lives Matter. Anyway, I had one student one day, and I said, they said, Miss, what's your language word for Aboriginal people? I say, oh, well, our family, we say Gooris. And for non-Aboriginal people, we say Duggies. And then this kid in grade 4 goes home and said, what's up, Duggies? I'm a Goori, but yous are all Duggies. And the parents came in and were like, Kiana, we're really, you know, great for what you do, but we're just confused what Duggies mean, because we're Duggies, but my son, you know, their son, who was white, was like, but he's saying he's a Goori, so I'm a bit confused.
He wants to claim.
Yeah.
A young fella claiming.
Yeah, no, it's good. But, yeah, bringing those things, I always do, you know, like with my grade 11 and 12s, and they're just, you know, they say it's their favourite subject. I don't know whether they say that because they're being nice, but, you know, like I had one student who graduated year 12, now he's studying law at UQ, and, you know, he's like, I'm challenging my tutors and my lecturers, because, you know, Indigenous incarceration and all of that is so high within the legal system, and we're not being taught about it, you know. But because I've had this understanding through grade 11 and 12 and understanding that worldview, I'm now questioning why we're not learning more about it, when it's going to be one of the key things we face when we go out within the industry. So
What does get up, show up, stand up mean for you and your family? Look, it means so many different things, you know?
I just think, you know, for me it's the people, you know, my old people, the elders within our grandpa line. You know, a lot of our old people, they didn't do this for, you know, social media, or they just did it as a collective thing to stand up, to show up, you know, and be staunch. And I think their efforts, the reason I can do what I do, the reason a lot of us can do what we do, is because they've paved the way for that, you know. And I attribute everything to them and their fight of, you know, self-determination, strength, resilience, and, you know, for us to have those opportunities. So I dedicate everything to my elders and my old people.
What is it about Strati Mob so staunch? I mean, so many other communities around here are as well, like they're very resilient, but since I've come up here not long ago, you know, you learn a lot about Strati Mob, and there's a real connection and a real, I guess, strength over there.
Yeah, I think, like, for me, I just, you know, like, I look at people like Marnie Donna, my dad's older sister, who was very big within the Tent Embassy movement in 1972, and I just think, I can only speak on behalf of my family, but for us, it's just being able to be on the shoulders of, you know, people who have made, who just have instilled such strong values within us. And, you know, one of those things is to be proud, to always do what's right, to be honest, you know. And some of those values have come from my great 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 grandparents, and you know, I grew up with not just my dad, but also all my family having those similar values. And I think for me, that's what drives me, you know,
yep,
to make sure I'm making them proud.
And it's been announced that the National NAIDOC Ball will be up here in Brisbane next year. I think Yanni was up there down, yep, in Nam. Did you see
he
all that?
He was. Hey? I was watching it. very Dudley.
What does that mean to you and your family, I guess, and, you know, all the Brisbane families, I guess, the Brisbane Blacks?
Yeah.
Hosting the ball up here next year. It's all good. All eyes on Brizzy.
Yeah, I'm excited. It'll be good. It looked pretty flash, so... no, I think it'll be great. I think it'll be good to get, you know, community together. I think there's lots to celebrate here. You know, I'm not very big on the, you know, social media stuff, but I see a lot of people doing great things, and I think coming together and, you know, just celebrating. And we're all in the same realm of wanting to do the best we can with the tools that we have, with the knowledge that we have in our own way. And I think coming together and celebrating that in a form of, you know, just being mob and coming together and learning what other people are doing, I think is awesome.
Yeah. Because it does put a national spotlight on Meanjin and Brisbane and all things up here. So it creates a national discussion. A lot of politicians come up here and eyes on Brisbane, you know. So hopefully a lot of that good stuff. Hey, Sis, got a little announcement to make here as well. Where is it, Rhea? I can't find it. But you've been... I can't find it. Ah, there it is, there at the top. It's not at the bottom. Hey, Kiana.
I know. Does he need another water?
Oh, no. Kiana is a finalist for the Brisbane NAIDOC Education Award, recognises and celebrates an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander individual or group in the education sector in southeast Queensland who champion and support education excellence through culturally embedded practices, leading to improved educational outcomes for ATSI Mob. Congratulations, you're a finalist at the Brisbane NAIDOC Awards, is.
Thank you.
Yoo-hoo! How do you feel about that?
Oh,
being recognised for the amazing work that we've been talking about.
Very surprised, but... That's Dudley.
Hey, you've been speechless now. Yeah. Look at you.
I'm a teacher who's speechless. Oh, thank you. That's Dudley.
Yep, yeah. So you've been recognised for all your great work that you do, sis. So congratulations for the AAA Murray Country family here today.
Wasn't that water?
Yeah. Nah. I wish there was something. Sis, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh, that's, I'm really speechless.
We'll see you at the ball on Saturday night.
I'll see you then.
I was going to have a chat to another auntie, but she's not up here at the moment. She's gone. But thanks for joining us today. Thanks for the young people coming in. Thanks for the mob who turned up. And don't forget, the Brisbane NAIDOC Ball is on Saturday night. Get your tickets if there's still some left, some single tickets, yes. So mob out there, you can still get some balcony single tickets, and then you wait for about an hour, then you go jump on other tables. That's what we all do. thanks for joining us today. You've been listening to Let's Talk on AAA Murray Country.